8 o'clock Eastern Wartime, WEAF, New York.
Good morning. This is W.W. Chaplin in the NBC newsroom in New York, bringing you your world news roundup with direct reports from NBC observers overseas. And it's true what the Japanese said about an Allied invasion of the Philippines. In a vast amphibious operation, we have invaded the big island of Leyte and cut the Philippines in two. We landed more than an entire army there. General MacArthur himself is there, and with him is every available other survivor of Corregidor and Bataan. With the colorful rhetoric which both he and MacArthur know so well how to employ, President Roosevelt hails the Philippine invasion with the phrase, "We shall strangle the black dragon of Japanese militarism forever." In Europe, the Canadians have launched a new attack near Antwerp, and the Russians are driving on into East Prussia. Here at home, that havoc hurricane from the Caribbean and Cuba failed to follow predictions of the weatherman that it would go to sea last night. It's centered now near Columbia, South Carolina. It's moving north, but diminishing in force. And now, a few words from your announcer.
For more than a year now, America has been winning an all-important battle on the home front, the battle to keep prices down. The rise in the cost of living has been virtually stopped in its tracks. Now, this didn't just happen. It was made possible by the wholehearted cooperation of most Americans. But the battle isn't altogether won. The fight to hold prices down must go on. The danger won't end even with the defeat of Germany. So here are the rules for the battle to hold prices down. Buy only what you need. And when you buy, pay no more than ceiling prices. Pay your ration points in full, and put every dollar you can spare into war bonds and other savings. Keep fighting to hold prices down. And now here's W.W. Chaplin and your World News Roundup.
President Roosevelt says that in the Pearl Harbor period, we learned our lesson about Japan, that now we are going to teach Japan her lesson. From communiques and other reports so far received from the Philippines, we are evidently in very good position to do just what the president promises. It's estimated that there are in the neighborhood of 225,000 Japanese in the Philippines. But we, well, I see one dispatch here which passed through censorship and so in effect has official confirmation. And this dispatch says that we landed more men on Leyte in 24 hours than we landed in Normandy on D-Day. When I was in Normandy for that invasion, I was told that we put 250,000 men ashore on June the 6th. In other words, according to the best information we have, there are 225,000 Japs in the Philippines and more than 250,000 of our men. It's even better than that, because the enemy force is cut in two. One major portion on Mindanao and lesser islands to the south of Leyte, and the other major portion on Luzon and smaller islands to the north. At one bold stroke, we have cut their Philippine army in two, whereas all our strength is concentrated on one central island. And best of all, we control the surrounding seas, we dominate the skies. This, quite plainly, was a most masterful invasion. The long-range view is excellent. There is less certainty about the immediate happenings. Almost nothing has come to us as yet about the enemy resistance, I mean by their land forces. We know that not one Japanese surface vessel dared confront our fleet. I only see mention of one enemy plane that so dared, and that plane was shot down. But what the enemy ashore on Leyte is doing, is in position to do, we just don't know. But we do know the conditions under which the fighting on Leyte will be conducted. We know what sort of battlefield it offers. For the first time since MacArthur and his men left the Philippines 2.5 years ago, they have a battlefield now giving them freedom for full use of artillery and armor. No jungles on Leyte, a big, broad plain, orderly rows of palms in coconut groves, fine all-weather roads. And the season of the typhoons is almost past. A fair weather gap may be expected before the coming of the rains. Also, there is a third army on Leyte which must be taken into account. There's the army of the Japanese, of course, the army of the invasion. and the army, at least the potential army, of the Filipinos. There are 1 million people on Leyte, people who rightfully call this eighth island of the Philippines their home. We can only guess how many of that 1 million have had training with the famous Philippine constabulary that MacArthur trained, how many have had secret guerrilla training during the period of occupation, how many can now rise in wrath and strike a mighty blow for their own deliverance. But among 1 million, there must be many. And now for our first report from overseas of the fighting in Europe. We call in now NBC on the Western Front.
This is James Cassidy with the American First Army on the German border. The fall of Aachen can be expected very soon. Last night, the Germans fired artillery shells into the town. They also sent over 16 planes in an attempt to drop food and supplies to the rest of the German garrison there. And out of the 16, the wreckage of 5 of the planes is scattered over the countryside nearby this morning. 5 planes that we shot down. As soon as Aachen falls, it will be possible to make public the full brilliant story of the strategy that made it possible to take this city at a minimum loss of American lives. The Germans tried to turn Aachen into a poor man's Stalingrad, but their own losses, which have been much greater than ours, show that the attempt has flopped. Our army has all but knocked out the German defense in Aachen with some stinging left-hand jabs, while staving off counterattacks with some fine old right-handed haymakers east of the city. The fact that our casualties have been light in Aachen does not mean that our soldiers have lacked courage in cleaning up the city. It is rather because they are seasoned fighters, men who know the little tricks that mean all the difference between life and death. I talked to some of these boys this morning. I asked them what makes the difference between a seasoned fighter and a green one. One soldier pointed to an alley choked with rubble. "You see that alley," he said. "Okay, now I know the Jerrys are up at the next main intersection. If I go up that alley instead of going up the main street and approach the intersection by crawling through somebody's house, I stand a better chance of coming out alive." In this game, you learn a lot of tricks like that. You learn that if you light a cigarette in the wrong place at night, you're asking for a bullet. You learn that when the Jerrys start dropping artillery on you on a fixed position, the best thing is not to lay still but to get out of there. In other words, you learn a lot of things that the green guy doesn't know. Sometimes what to you looks overcautious, what may look overcautious, is really good fighting. Well, that's the kind of men we have fighting in Aachen at this moment. Their skill, unfortunately, is sometimes not enough. 3 days ago, I had a long talk in Aachen with an officer who told me how he was planning to recommend one of his men for a citation for bravery. I doubt if the recommendation will ever be made, for this morning I learned that the officer is dead. For him, the story of our low casualties in Aachen will have no meaning. He was one of the men who could not beat the law of averages. He joins the unwritten statistics of suffering and the written ones of death that the defeat of Germany compels us to write. I return you to NBC in New York.
And we take you back once more to Europe for the word of the fighting in Russia. We now call in NBC in Moscow.
This is Robert Magidoff speaking from Moscow. It is premature, even at this late day and hour, to sum up Mr. Churchill's talks in Moscow. It seems certain, however, that the joint communique, which will be issued at the end of the Big Two conference, will contain good reason for the United Nations to rejoice and for the enemy to despair. The one major problem that seems destined for solution only sometime after the talks is the Polish question. The leaders of the National Committee of Liberation returned to Lublin yesterday, where in the meantime a storm has been gathering. DAS reports from Lublin state that a wave of terrorist murders of men trying to carry out the agrarian reforms launched by the committee started mass meetings where resolutions have been adopted holding Mikolajczyk and his government directly responsible for these acts of terror and demanding from Mikolajczyk a public statement without which the resolutions say no negotiations can be started. Trouble is brewing also in another direction. All Soviet papers have cited at great length the Swedish paper New Dag, alleging that a member of the United States mission in Stockholm has joined an Estonian national government formed by anti-Soviet refugees from the Baltic Republic. The paper also alleges that a member of the United States mission to Stockholm donated 900,000 Swedish marks for the creation in Sweden of an anti-Russian organization of Baltic emigres. The Soviet press does not comment on this report, but cites the New Dog as saying it would be very desirable to get an explanation from Mr. Johnson, the United States minister in Stockholm. And now I switch you to the NBC in Washington.
This is Leif Eade in Washington. And the newsmen in your national capital have spent a fitful, restless 24 hours waiting for the break on the Philippines invasion at the White House and the Pentagon building. Aside from the president's message, which came out of Steve Early's office well toward 1 o'clock this morning, nothing much did break. And when that message did come out, we found ourselves with a scathing indictment of the Japanese and a renewed promise of freedom for the Philippines. The president says Leyte is only a way station on the road to Japan. He says we have the will and the power to teach Japan the cost of treachery and deceit. We shall teach this lesson so that Japan will never forget it. To the Filipinos and the other conquered nations of Asia, the president promises we shall free the enslaved peoples. We shall restore stolen lands and looted wealth to their rightful owners. We shall strangle the black dragon of Japanese militarism forever. And to the Filipinos, the president says, when we have finished the job of driving the Japs from the islands, the Philippines will be a free and independent republic. To General MacArthur, the president sends this message. You have the nation's gratitude and the nation's prayers for success as you and your men fight your way back to Bataan. This Philippines invasion is bound to have its effect on our political situation here at home. Washington observers aren't making any predictions out loud, but they do think it can't hurt the president's chances in November. They're waiting to see what Governor Dewey has to say tonight in his speech at Pittsburgh. The Pearl Harbor issue, which has been threatening these many weeks, broke out into the open again when Republican Representative Mel Moss charged that the president and high officials had word of the Pearl Harbor attack plans 6 hours in advance and sent no warning. Otherwise, the cigarette industry says it's giving us civilians just as many smokes as we had last year, but the difference is that we're smoking at the fastest rate in history, and that's why there's a shortage. This is Eade in Washington, returning you now to New York.
We've heard this morning, so far, from James Cassidy, who is with the First Army, the First American Army on the German border, from Robert Magidoff in Moscow, and Leif Eade in Washington. Now, here's your announcer, and then I'll be back with more news.
5 years after the start of World War I, the cost of living had risen more than 73%. 5 years after the start of the present war, the cost of living had increased only a little more than 28%. Why? Because in this war, the great majority of Americans have cooperated wholeheartedly to hold prices down. For more than a year now, the rise in the cost of living has been stopped in its tracks. We have been winning an all-important battle on the home front. But it's not a fight we can quit for a moment. The danger of inflation is always with us. It will be with us even after the defeat of Germany. It will be with us until the day that civilian production returns to normal. So here's what we must continue to do in our fight against inflation. Buy only what we need. Pay no more than ceiling prices. Pay our ration points in full. And put every extra dollar we have into war bonds or other savings. Don't let up for a minute. Keep fighting to hold prices down. And again, here's W.W. Chaplin in the NBC newsroom.
Here is a bulletin just received from our Supreme Headquarters in Paris. It says that American troops have captured the key road hub of Bruyere in eastern France, and with their French allies of the 6th Army Group, have seized command of 3 vital passes which lead through the Vosges Mountains to the upper Rhineland above Belfort. Activity on much of the ground along Europe's Western Front has been temporarily reduced by evil weather. But the aerial preparation for the impending big push there goes on full force despite the storm. Last night, through ice and clouds, the RAF made a shattering doubleheader attack on Stuttgart, one of the main centers of electrical engineering industries in Germany. There were 2 large forces of Halifax's and Lancaster's engaged. They pounded the city 4 hours apart. And now, goodbye from the newsroom in New York.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.